look again at the standard from the early years to now, I mean, you can see the standard's just so much higher. The award, it has encouraged good writing. You know, you got to acknowledge the Hornby book, Fever Pitch. I mean, it really did set a new bar for the award, I think, as well. It raised the bar for the award.
Hey there, welcome back to the William Hill Sports Book of the Year 2020 podcast. Now, the voice you just heard was that of Paul Kimmage, and fans of this award will know that Paul won this prize back in 1990, 30 years ago, with his book Rough Ride, An Insight into Pro Cycling. What a title that was, and really stands the test of time over the last 30 years. We had a record number of entries for this year's prize, though. It really is going from strength to strength. And myself, Graham Sharp, one of the founders of this award, and Neil Foggin, we read every single one of those entries, and then we gathered in my back garden to record these podcasts, complete with my neighbour doing his repairs to his garage roof in the background, which no doubt you'll be able to hear. We are recording in the back garden, obviously, because of COVID, wanting to make sure that we're all nice and secure. But we were talking about the long list of 15 that we've managed to whittle it down to. The judges themselves will further whittle those names down to 6. We will hear from all 6 shortlisted writers, and then ultimately, of course, we'll hear from the winner on the big day in December. Don't forget to hit subscribe so that every episode will appear on your device as if by magic. You won't have to do a thing. And if you can leave us a review as well, that really helps us, perhaps even tell a friend. But for now, sit back and relax as we talk about the latest 5 books to make the long list for the William Hill Sports Book of the Year 2020. And welcome back to our final look through the long list of 15 titles of books that have made it through to the William Hill Sports Book of the Year 2020 long list prize. Most prestigious award in sports writing, one I've followed for many years. And if you want to hear the other 10 books that have been long listed, then you need to look to our previous episodes. Keep subscribing to this podcast, though, because in weeks to come, we're going to hear from the shortlisted authors and the judges who are on the main panel, who are going to be not only deciding on the shortlist, but on the overall winner as well. And we'll be getting their thoughts in weeks to come. I'm still sat in my garden in these COVID times with Foggy and Graham Sharp from William Hill. And, well, let's have a quick question, because it's been such a strong long list this year with a record number of entries. There were some books that didn't quite make it, and I'm going to ask you both to pick a book that was a favourite of yours but didn't quite make it onto the long list this year. Graham, if I was to come to you first, which one would you go for?
I would probably go for Paul Tonkinson's 26.2, a book about him tackling a marathon for the first time and telling his adventures along the way in humorous style. I thought it was a bit different and well done, but it didn't quite make it.
No, it's a strong book. What about you, Foggy? Which was the one that didn't quite make it?
As Graham has said, that book, I will go with Blood and Circus by Robert O'Connor. Again, for this book, it was one sitting. I'm not a massive football fan, but I found this fully enjoyable. It was entertaining, and again, you can recommend it to anybody. I think it's a great book.
It's basically, so that book is, because I like that book as well, and it's a story. He goes round the Eastern Bloc countries and looks at football, both the clubs and the fans, and frankly puts himself into some very, very dangerous situations.
Yeah, and at some points there's one particular part when he's talking about walking across the border and he doesn't know what's going to happen to him. As he gets nearer and nearer to the checkpoint. I just found it fascinating. And it's not just sport, he talks about politics as well, of those regions and stuff. I just found it really entertaining.
I suppose if I was to ask or answer for my pick, it would be Raised a Warrior by Susie Petrocelli, which is a story. So she's a football player in America. She's not a well-known name, but basically this book is a story, as much as anything, about her relationship with her father. And if for nothing else, it has, I think, the best line in any book that I've read this year. As soon as I read it, I thought, oh my God, put this down. This is amazing. And I think I've remembered it correctly. It was, yes, this is it. She said, "I was sat on the bleachers sucking on a popsicle the first time I saw my father almost beat a man to death." And you think, whoa, right, okay, looks like I'm going to be following the rest of that chapter. Very strong indeed, big fan. Right, let's get to the books that did make the long list. And we have now reached P in our list of authors. And it's Matt Piper who provides our next title, Out of the Darkness, My Story in Football from Top to Rock Bottom, the gritty, hard-hitting autobiography of former Leicester and Sunderland winger Matt Piper, ex-England under-21 hopeful, whose dreams were shattered when injury forced him to retire at the age of 24, causing his life to spiral out of control. He was the last ever scorer at Filbert Street in 2002, was forced into a £3.5 million move to Wearside amid Leicester's financial misery, but that high was short-lived and soon his dreams and life crumbled. After 16 operations, failed comebacks, anxiety attacks, he retired with no clue of where to turn next, and soon his daily existence became dependent on alcohol, cannabis and Valium. There are plenty of autobiographies out there, and there are a select few of them that are honest. And as we've said before, those are the books that you need to look out for, the ones that are honest. But there are so many stories within this book about his retirement. As I've already mentioned, alcohol, Valium, racism, almost being sectioned. I'm struggling to think of a book that has managed to tick quite so many boxes as this one did. I read it in one sitting. I think this is an outstanding title. What were your thoughts, Graham, on this?
It's a real back from the abyss story. I'm not sure whether this is the book that Matt Piper wanted to tell when he sat down with his ghost Joe Bruin to tell it. But it's very well told. So I'm not sure whose influence it is that we got this warts and all account, which, as you say, is absolutely, you think to yourself initially, yeah, blimey, you know, on one hand this poor guy, on the other hand this idiot, and on the other hand how did he survive all of this? It is a literally incredible story. On a slightly different note, I'm really surprised that this wasn't taken up by one of the bigger publishers out there, but I'm delighted in a way that it got its opportunity for the story to be told. It's a searingly honest story, a cautionary read for anybody. One of those books that you sit back and you think, how much of this is his own fault? How much is it circumstances coming in on him? Could it have happened differently? Could he have changed the way it happened? And I think it would have been very difficult for him because of what he went through. But it raises almost as many questions as it answers. While you're reading it, you're just at the end of it relieved that he's come through it looking in good shape, and hopefully, you know, is still in good shape. But it is quite a dramatic story that was completely unexpected in its impact when I picked it up to read it.
Absolutely. And Matt Piper is not a household name, but and it always feels to me, if you're not a household name and you're going to write a book, you've got to be honest. And he absolutely does that. I know, Foggy, that you mentioned there was somebody in your office had said Matt Piper's book, or hadn't read the book, but when he saw that it was a Matt Piper book, he said, this guy's got a story to tell. So what did you think about this one?
It's brutally honest. And again, as what's already been said, I've got to agree. I like the fact that he ticks a load of boxes and he talks about stuff. He talks about stuff which, in the past, he probably wouldn't have mentioned because you didn't talk about stuff. You didn't mention that. You didn't mention this. And he does, and I think it's a great book. Again, I didn't know who he was. It wasn't until I was speaking to a colleague in the office and he said, who was a Sunderland fan, he says, yeah, he came to play for us. It didn't work out. After you finished it, pop it in the post because I want to read it. And it's worth being put in the post and read. It's a great book.
Let's head on to one, and I'm a massive fan of this one, Ian Ridley. Now, Ian Ridley is no stranger to great writing, and probably most famously, you'll have read Tony Adams' autobiography, Addicted, which I think I'm right, Graham, that is a former winner. Yeah, yeah. Oh, shortlisted, rather. But the book he has written here is, I think, astonishing. It's called The Breath of Sadness on Love, Grief and Cricket. And it's talking about his wife, Vicky Orvice, who you either, well, you may know her as the athletics correspondent at The Sun. She was also a writer on football and many other sports. But after she died a couple of years ago, Ian decided to write this book and how he was dealing with grief. Now, I am not easily moved by books, but I was in bits reading this one this summer. And I would also make an argument that this book, no book better encapsulates how 2020 has felt than this one. An astonishing and such a well-written piece of work I haven't come across for a long time. I'm a massive fan of Ian Ridley's work here. I'm going to come to you first, Graham. What were your thoughts on The Breath of Sadness?
It could have been maudlin, and you could have thought this is somebody wallowing in sympathy for themselves and self-pity, but he's avoided all of that. It's just... as you say, it's telling that it appears in this year of all years, and it really resonates because of that. It's a story which, to some extent, most of us will have gone through in some shape or form with some member of our family or friends or whatever, possibly, and we've all thought. At the time, we've all probably kept our thoughts private, you know, and this is a book which exposes to everybody the innermost and deepest thoughts of somebody on the loss of the love of their life, effectively, and how he has, I don't think he would have set out to think, you know, I'm writing a sports book here, but how he has related it to what sport meant to them both initially and how it has helped him to some extent deal with what happened. It's not something that I can find anything really to compare it with, and that in itself is something that you don't often say with you know, books about sport by definition. You know, you would expect that somewhere somebody has written something along the same lines. I'm not sure that there's been anything along these lines before. Certainly, as we've said with a number of books, the honesty here is quite astonishing, that he exposes his own emotions for everybody to see, and he's not ashamed of doing that, and why should he be? Everybody will get something from this book, so it's not really down to me to tell them what they should take from it, but I think it's no... fluke that all three of us admired it highly, and it went through to this stage without any objections from any of us, and it will be fascinating to see what the judges have to say.
I think as well, when you mentioned the honesty there, what shone out for me is clearly he is having to cope with grief, and in his honesty, he's saying, I didn't cope with it particularly well. The reason why this works as a sports book is part of his means of coping is he starts going to watch county championship cricket. And you almost feel he's going to those games because he knows there's very few other people there. He can just be there and let the cricket just wash over him without having to make conversation with anyone, without having to even engage in it. Just, it's almost a sort of form of meditation that he's going through.
Yeah, I can't argue with that at all, and that's very much part of it. The only concerning part of it, in a way, when you've read it, is that you're feeling to yourself, you know, at some point we all have to get over these sort of events, or we have to learn to live with them, and you very much hope that ultimately Ian will come to terms with what's happened. And because there are some incidences that you read in there where you're thinking to yourself, you don't want to go down that path, you know. So in that respect, parts of it you could look at and think that's a little bit concerning. Maybe you're being a little bit too honest with us there about your thoughts. And hopefully you've got a lot of this off of your chest by writing the book, and that you will now be able to move on, like we all have to when we lose somebody for whatever reason it is that's very important to us and close to us. But yeah, it's a very emotional read, and I would be surprised not to see it on the shortlist.
Absolutely. Ian Ridley, The Breath of Sadness. Foggy, you're as big a fan of all three of us of this book.
Yeah, for me it's wow. This book is just great. Now, I didn't read it straight away. I'd seen that you read it and that you had to put it down a few times. So I sort of got that into my head that this book was going to be a tough read. And you can't read it in one sitting because it's just too emotional. And there's a chapter, I think it's chapter 7, when he's talking about a very dark subject. And he makes it a little bit light-hearted when he talks about that on the Saturday night, if you don't want to know the football results and you're watching the news, they say, look away now. And he sort of says, don't read this chapter if it's not for you. And I think it's just brilliant. To me, I recommend it all day long. It's got to be on the shortlist, this book.
I'm a massive fan. Let's move on to our third in this particular batch, and that is The Rodchenkov Affair, How I Brought Down Putin's Secret Doping Empire by Dr. Grigory Rodchenkov. I'll read the blurb from the back. What follows is not an attempt to make excuses for my actions, nor to justify them. It strives to be one thing above all, honest. I will not shy away from giving a full and candid account of what I did, nor do I ask you to forgive me. Basically, this guy, if you don't know, and if you've not seen the Icarus documentary on Netflix, I'd highly recommend you do. But this guy was responsible for Russia's doping program. And, well, perversely, he was involved in the anti-doping program. But what that basically meant was because Vladimir Putin was so insistent that they would perform well in the Sochi Olympics in 2014. What is now well documented is that the Russian athletes, certainly for Sochi, but it now transpires for other Olympics as well, were doping. And the anti-doping program was set up in order to make sure they weren't caught by the international authorities. Rodchenkov turned whistleblower. He then escaped to the United States. He is constantly on the move there. He says that he is on Putin's hit list of five people that Putin wants put out of the picture. He is very honest about how they did it, and in particular how the KGB or the FSB, the people who took over from the KGB, were involved in swapping samples in Sochi to make sure that no Russian athletes were caught, or rather the samples didn't show any prescribed substances. He even, so honest is he even makes the point that doping makes sport fair, which those of us who love our sport will be aghast at those opinions, but at least he's being honest. I again read this in one sitting. It is just an amazing story. And this guy is clearly in fear of his life, apparently has now had plastic surgery and doesn't go out of the house without a bodyguard or a bulletproof vest on. Such is the threat against his life. Yes, I'm a big fan of this one. Graham, your thoughts on the Rodchenkov Affair?
I'm not quite sure how you can talk about this book without talking about David Walsh's book as well, The Russian Affair. You know, they go together. They cover the same area. I hadn't, until this weekend, seen the Icarus film, and I watched it at the weekend. I'm not sure how to take this book. I'm not sure how to take Rodchenkov himself, particularly after seeing him, you know, in the Icarus movie, where he almost deliberately puts himself into a position of potential harm. Quite happily, quite self-willingly, and takes all sorts of risks in that film, which you think, why is he doing this? He must think that he's somehow protected from anything happening to him. I didn't know how much of the book to believe. how much of his motives to believe. He ends the film, the Icarus film, speaking to his wife and daughter, you know, and saying he can't see them any longer. Well, that's pretty much your own fault, mate. And there's a difference between being brutally honest and making excuses when you've been caught in some shape or form. And I think if you contrast this with the Russian affair, you do see a different aspect to the same story, which makes it difficult to judge one without the other. So I'm hoping if one of the two gets through, both of the two get through, to be considered.
Foggy, your thoughts on this, the Rodchenkov affair?
It was a one-sitting book for me. I've not seen the documentary. I read this first. I'll go to the documentary second. I enjoyed it. I found it fascinating. But again, I agree with Graham. I think we've got two books here, this one and then the Dave Walsh book. They complement each other because they tell you different sides of the story. I think it's a good book.
Ticks a box for me. Right, let's move on to the fourth in our batch here. And this is one that I'm a big fan of, Mud Mall Mascara by Catherine Spencer, the former England women's rugby captain. When fighting for a dream can make you and break you. Catherine Spencer had a dream to lead her country's rugby team to victory in the World Cup. Every single day of her adult life was shaped by this ambition. She made sacrifices that affected every part of her life. And in 2010, she resigned her captaincy in the wake of England's defeat in the World Cup final. What do you do when you come so agonisingly close to fulfilling your dream? How do you define yourself? Well, what you do is you write this book that Catherine has done with searing honesty. Now, she went from having resigned just after England lost in the World Cup final and then watched her former teammates winning the World Cup. And in the opening chapter, you get a sense of how honest she is going to be, because she basically says, I could barely watch. I was, admits to bitterness, to her envy at seeing her former teammates lifting a trophy she tried so hard to win. And what I particularly liked about this is, apart from the honesty, she's talking about a very human attribute that we all have, but we don't like to admit to, which is, the age-old Morrissey lyrics have it, we hate it when our friends become successful. She said, you know, I'm done with being a pioneer, with being a trailblazer. I want to win the trophies. I want to be able to look back at medals. That's a very human thing to say, but it's not things that people would always admit to. Also, I like the fact that the title Mud Mall Mascara is a nod to the fact that she says, just because I'm an England rugby player doesn't mean I've abdicated my right to be feminine. And she talks about, at one point, about a boyfriend who, as part of his chat-up line, thought it would be a good idea to say, ooh, haven't you got thick arms? Which I can't imagine why he thought that was going to go down well. But I really enjoyed this book. And I have to say, when I first picked it up, I thought, well, as I've already said, I'm not a massive rugby fan. But Catherine absolutely won me over. One sitting for this book. I'm a big advocate for it. Graham, let's come to you first. Your thoughts on Mud Mall Mascara by Catherine Spence?
Yeah, it really crept up on me, the book, in a way, and I became more and more of a fan of it as I read through it. And she does, you know, you made that point about how she was so determined to do well that she can't bear to see anybody else do better or to do well, and that really is something that resonated with me. And you know, she's making the point, when she was playing, female rugby players and female sports people were rewarded even less well than they are now at that level. And it, you know, that reflected back. My sports career was entirely played on along the lines of Sunday morning football, basically. But I know that everybody that I used to play with and against was as committed as anybody that's playing in a Manchester City, Manchester United derby. You know, we wanted to win as much as they did. And likewise with her here, you know, you can identify with that, and you really appreciate what she's saying there, because you think, yeah, I'm with you on that. You're absolutely spot on. And the book did tell us an awful lot that I certainly didn't know about the way in which the rugby girls were treated against their male counterparts, and the crucial element, they weren't even allowed to wear the English rose on their shirts. I mean, that's
astonishing
nonsense. And you know, when they were playing matches in tandem with male teams as well, that the entrance fee was different for the women, or they had to pay again after the men had played or whatever, some nonsense, complete and utter nonsense. She wins you over, you know. You think at first, oh, she's just venting her own spleen, and you suddenly think, yeah, you've got a point there. You know, you're right, and you grow to admire her along the way. Unlike her personality, I do. I really admire her spiky personality, and delighted to see the book on the long list, and another one which I shall be more than happy to see if it goes further.
Foggy, your thoughts? Mudmore Mascara.
This was a surprise. I think all of us have said when we got this book, we looked at it and thought it's a rugby book, and it just wins you over. She's very honest. As Graham said, they couldn't wear the red rose because of the RFU. She also talks about how everyone should be proud to play for their country. She talks about cash. She talks about that she doesn't believe that you should be paid to play for your country. It should be the privilege. She's very honest. It's a great book. Anyone can read this one and come away and think, yeah, I've enjoyed that.
I know that she now is on the sort of after dinner circuit, so she does inspiring talks as well, and that comes across in this book. Right, let's get to the last book on our long list, and this has got Contender written all over it. We've already alluded to it when we were talking about the Rudchenkov affair. This one is called The Russian Affair, the true story of the couple who uncovered the greatest sporting scandal. It's by David Walsh, who has some chops, it's worth saying, as far as not only sports writing is concerned, but this prize. This is, as Graham has already said, this is the other side to the Rudchenkov affair. A great story that absolutely needs to be told. I think it's interesting for me. He's written this very much like it's a novel, and I think that's an interesting choice. I wonder how this book would have read if he'd chosen to just play it straight and write it as a non-fiction. But it's basically about a guy, a couple. The woman in the couple is a former Russian athlete, and the guy is a former Russian anti-doping official, and how both of them worked as whistleblowers to help bring down or rather expose what the Russians were doing as far as doping's concerned. Definitely a story that needs to be told, and definitely one that works in counterpoint to, as I say, the Rudchenkov affair that we've discussed already. Graham, your thoughts on David Walsh's book?
The male half of the couple in this book is the mirror image of Rudchenkov. He's the guy in Russia that refused point blank to have anything to do with the corruption, if we are to believe what he says. And I don't see much in the book that suggests that's not the case. Yet he ends up marrying a woman who is doping. But it seems that despite that, you know, he maintains his beliefs and suffers as a result, and eventually that convinces her to leave the country with him. It does read like a novel, as you say, and David is a great storyteller, so it that works really well. The two books complement each other. It's not possible to believe everything that's in both of them. Basically, but both are compelling. They deserve to be read together, and so that people can make up their own minds. But I think that gives us about a dozen books on the shortlist so far that we've recommended. Unfortunately, this is not a decision that we will have to ultimately make. I'd be shattered if neither of these books made the final. I'm positive at least one will, but I'd be very happy if they They both do. And then readers, we're recommending both these books are extremely readable. They raise great moral questions. And they ask you to make up your own mind what you believe in these stories. And I think David is as honest as the day is long. And if he believes these two, the story of these two, which I think comes across in the book that he does, then that's a stronger evidence for me than Mr. Rodchenkov's own opinion of himself.
Absolutely. I mean, David, as we've already said, he is someone who has great chops as far as being an investigative journalist is concerned, and he has definitely done the hard yards in this book. Foggy, coming to you finally, your thoughts on The Russian Affair by David Walsh?
When I saw this on social media that this book was coming out, I thought, wow, I'm ready for this to come in. And when we came in, you're not disappointed. Absolutely love this book. Again, it complements the other. It's a great book, really enjoyable. Hopefully it'll get on the shortlist.
I think you will agree that, in this batch alone, we've had some world beaters there. But this is an extraordinarily strong long list this year. Record number of entries for 2020 for the William Hill Sports Book of the Year. Make sure you hit subscribe, because these podcasts, although we've finished with the long list, we are not done by a long chalk, because we are going to get to the short list. And when the short list is announced, we're going to be hearing from all six of the shortlisted writers, though I'd rate my chances of being able to speak to Dr. Grigory Rodchenkov as small to nil. I'm sure we'll find a way somehow of getting in contact with him. But yes, you'll be able to hear all of those if you hit subscribe. These podcasts will then just appear in your feed. I'm going to now ask both of you, and in fact all three of us, are going to give our favourites from the 15 books. Pick one that would be your favourite. I don't envy the judge's task of being able to pick a winner from this lot, but if you were gun to the head, Graham, having to pick your favourite, let's say favourite as opposed to winner, which would be your favourite of the 15 that we've spoken about on these podcasts?
I'm in no doubt, Emily Chappell.
What are your thoughts, Foggy?
Born Fighter.
Well, in which case, the three of us are going to go for a different choice. Mine would be The Breath of Sadness by Ian Ridley. I'm a big fan of that one. I hope you're all enjoying getting through these sport books as much as we've enjoyed talking about them. Thanks for listening to the William Hill Sports Book of the Year 2020 podcast. Make sure you hit subscribe to get the next episode straight to your device. And if you can leave a review and even tell a friend, we'd be really grateful. And we'll be back with you shortly.